Insights on the Middle East with author and academic Avi Yoresh.
You see what happens when you go away for 2 weeks, Avi? You forget that there's stings all prepared for your best correspondence. Slap myself on the wrist now.
Simon, always happy back on the show.
I'll remember the next time. Good. I'm glad. So did I. Avi, I do want to talk to you about Iran. We're going to make a bit of a series out of this because Iran personally just absolutely astounds, interests, and amazes me. Such a rich, incredible culture and yet such incredible hatred towards Israel. This week we're going to talk about international sanctions. Will they be effective? Won't they be effective? And something else I'd like to throw into the pot is why was there such, let me put the question differently. Most people were very concerned about Israel's welfare in respect of the nuclear deal. Why was there such disagreement as to whether it would or wouldn't work?
All right, so let's start with the nuclear deal, where the reservations were, and then we're going to talk about the sanctions regime. Yes. And really effectively what's at the heart and soul of the sanctions regime. So first, most proponents of the deal felt that getting any kind of deal was better than having no kind of deal. Those that were detractors of the deal often said that with a sunset clause, in other words, a clause that basically allows them to march towards the bomb in a legitimate sort of way after 10 years, was only pushing the was kicking the barrel down the road, and basically after 10 years, we're going to have a bomb anyway. Those that were for the deal said, look, 10 years is a long time. A lot could change in the region over the course of 10 years. I happen to have come down on the side of thinking that having a deal was at the expense of it being a bad deal was not a particularly good way to go about it. From my perspective, we should have essentially isolated Iran and continuously done so, as we have done with North Korea, and made them a pariah regime. Iran, as a result of the deal, has been able to put itself back into the international financial sector and enjoy the benefits of being a country that essentially leverages the international financial sector. So that's on the deal side.
Yeah.
The sanctions regime really circles around oil and banking. And so let's talk about what it really does mean from a banking perspective. Let's just assume I have a bank account, I'm making this up, at Wells Fargo or Bank of America, okay. Right? And I have an account there. Every bank or most big banks around the world have something called a correspondent banking relationships with other banks around the world. It's how the international financial sector works. So if you want to wire money from South Africa to, I'm making this up, to China, it's going to go through a correspondent banking relationship. So let's just assume, you know, that there's an indirect account where they want to go through dollars. You have to go through a U.S. bank. The U.S. stood up in 2010 and said, the way this works is as follows. Iran at the time had 59 international financial institutions around the world that were helping it march towards the bomb. I know because I wrote the book back in 2010 called Iran's Dirty Banking, and I named and shamed 59 banks around the world, including Bank Tokyo Mitsubishi, Mitsui, Commerce Bank, ING, banks that essentially were providing Iran with correspondent banking relationships in a whole host of currencies, the euro, the franc, the pound, the dollar, the yen, so on and so forth. Congress stood up in 2010 and passed a law called CISADA, the Comprehensive Iran Sanctions Accountability and Divestment Act, and it said as follows. Every U.S. bank has an obligation to not only know who their correspondents are, but who their correspondents are. And if any of them are a bank in Iran that has been blacklisted for proliferating weapons of mass destruction, engaging in terrorism, or a whole host of other reasons, you may not have a correspondent banking relationship with that financial institution. And as a result of that legislation, Iran, the banks around the world that were willing to provide Iran with financial services went down to very few number, just a, you know, two, three or four, a handful. Okay. And as a result, Iran was unable to move its, money around the international financial sector. And as a result, ultimately, came to the negotiation table in order to negotiate, the latest deal with the United States, known as the JCPOA.
Are these comprehensive sanctions affecting any transaction, any international transaction, or was it only in respect of military goods and the like?
No, it was specific categories, but it's a very good question. You had to make an ex, in order to have a transaction, you had to have an exception that showed it was legitimate. And as a result, big banks around the world did not want to touch Iran. Those were called targeted financial sanctions. And so Iran really was isolated. And when the negotiations took place, this was the first thing they asked for. They wanted to be back ingratiated into the international financial sector.
And in terms of the effect that these sanctions would actually have on Iranians in Iran, how real is the effect of such sanctions?
So sanctions were crippling. The rial plummeted. Their currency really plummeted. The man on the street did feel the pain and suffering. There's no way to engage in sanctions for it not to hurt the wider economic reality of both the regime and of the individual, the common man on the street. The U.S. tried to engage in something called targeted financial sanctions, where it went after individuals, financial institutions, and organizations specifically blacklisted for proliferating weapons of mass destruction and engaging in terrorism. But I would be lying to you if I said that it did not affect the common individual on the street. The hope was as follows. My former friend and mentor, Uri Lubani, who was one of Israel's last ambassadors to Iran in the late 1970s, always put it as follows. Yeah. Sanctions were meant to speed up the regime change clock and slow down the nuclear clock, okay? Yeah. And that, by definition, will have an impact on everyone in the country. And it was crippling, and as a result, Iran did negotiate. Now, from my perspective, the U.S. made a major error in judgment in giving them the sunset clause, which essentially said after 10 years, you can have the bomb through legitimate means. Now, from my perspective, if you are going to achieve the bomb, you still ought to be considered a pariah regime. That is not the case today, and it is the primary reason why the Trump administration pulled out of the deal. That, unfortunately, has the unfortunate side effect of no one now in the international community believes the United States, when it negotiates a deal, that it will not pull out of that particular deal.
Wow, Avi, that was really fascinating. Thank you so much. I look forward to discussing this Iran issue over the next couple of weeks. I do want to get into issues such as the makeup, the ethnic makeup of the society, the difference between Persians and Arabs, the Jewish community, pursue this issue of funding of terror. But thank you. What a pleasure it is to have somebody with your expertise on our program. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Simon.